Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. By any chance, are you familiar with Globe Inn? Well, if not, you're about to be. Based in San Francisco, Globe Inn is a monthly subscription service of artisan-made products from around the globe. Its mission is to help solve poverty through fair wages and job creation. Globe Inn searches for exceptional work created by artists and small collectives, giving them access to the worldwide marketplace, while at the same time allowing customers to discover amazing products from the comfort of their homes. And every product has a story. Lisa Moseva, one of Globe Inn's co-founders and its director of marketing, is my guest today. Lisa came to the States from Russia, hoping to swim professionally. She had no idea her focus would change dramatically when she began an international studies program at Old Dominion University. Lisa got hooked on nonprofits, charities, and grassroots programs and realized how much she wanted to affect change and help those who need it the most. After graduation, Lisa got a job with the SEEP Network in Washington, D.C., a global network of microfinance organizations, her first introduction to the concept of social business. She went back to school to get an MBA in finance with a focus on impact investing. But it was on a visit back to Moscow that her adventure with Globe Inn began. It now has more than 6,500 subscribers and is one of the biggest players in the fair trade industry. Let's meet and get to know Globe Inn's co-founder. Lisa, welcome, and thanks so much for joining me today.
Hi, Sandy. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, let's start with you were born in Moscow and then you came to the United States for college and stayed?
Yes, it's exactly right.
Why didn't you want to stay in Russia and go to school?
Yeah, I actually really wanted to continue swimming professionally, but at the same time, I was really interested in studies, education. So in the U.S., there is this perfect system of where you can continue swimming professionally in a very high intensive level. But at the same time, you go to school like everyone else, you can get the best education and at the same time, continue my swimming career. So that was the idea. And that's how I got a full scholarship to Old Dominion University. So that was kind of a win-win for me. I already knew English and wanted also, you know, to experience the world, of course. So that's how I came to US.
But was your goal at some point, for example, to be an Olympic swimmer?
It was certainly my dream. A lot of swimmers, you know, after they finish high school, I mean, I think it's typical for athletes in general. After you finish high school, if you're not on a, you know, on a national level, you tend to finish your career. And I felt that I'm not done yet, that I could improve my results.
Well, tell me how swimming became a part of your life. When did you begin to swim?
Oh, I was in the pool probably at 6 or even earlier, but I did synchronized swimming first.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so for 6 years until 12, I did synchronized swimming. It has a very good school in Russia. And then I quit synchronized swimming. I wasn't very good at it, actually, but I was pretty good in swimming. So I went into traditional swimming and, swam for almost 10 years or more.
You're not the first person to do this, but even so, I think it is a really big deal to leave what you know, what you're familiar with, your friends, your family, your comfort zone, and pick up and come to the United States where I'm guessing you knew no one.
Yep, that's exactly right. It's not like my mom, you know, could travel with me and drop off my bags and say bye to me. So, I was in communication with my coach at Old Dominion University, and my teammates picked me up from the airport. I didn't know them, of course. But slowly but surely, you kind of go through it. And I think it's just this kind of changes. It's the easiest to do when, you know, you're young and like teenager. It gets harder, every time you have to do it as you get older. But at the same time, unless you step out of your comfort zone, you're not growing. I believe in this.
You need to take risks. You're obviously a risk taker. Tell me, where is Old Dominion?
It's in Norfolk, Virginia.
I thought it was Virginia. Now, come on. Lisa, that had to be a bit of a culture shock.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when I was swimming for 4 years and doing my bachelor degree, you know, I was very focused on my school and swimming. There's not much time, much free time. And I always wanted to be an A student. So all my free time, I studied and slept in between practices. But yeah, after, you know, I finished my degree, you go into like the adult world and you see everything around you very differently. And that's why, you know, with my focus on nonprofit and international development, I felt a need to go to a bigger city, especially like the one like DC.
During your 4 years, did you go back and forth to Russia?
Absolutely, yes, every summer.
And then when you came back and you graduated, it was very clear to you that you were going to carve a life for yourself in the States?
More so, yeah, I would say more yes than no. I really wanted to pursue my career in international development and profit. These sectors are much, much more developed in the U.S. Than Russia. So I definitely wanted at least to take a chance. You know, after you finish your bachelor degree in U.S. or any educational program, you have this temporary work permit. So I definitely wanted to try it out. But I also, you know, I was still very much in touch with Russia and all the political developments there. So, yeah, so I never kind of closed that door either.
What year did you graduate?
2010.
So after graduation, you get a job with the SEEP Network. Tell me what that was all about.
Well, the funny thing is that I was very interested in nonprofit and charity work already in Russia. And actually, the person who inspired me was pretty typically, maybe, or funny enough, it's Angelina Jolie. Russian international development and charity sector was very, very small at the time. General population doesn't know much about it. It's very different from U.S. There's no like big fundraising campaigns. Celebrities were not talking about it as much. Mm. But here I am. I'm, you know, reading regular celebrity magazine, but Angelina Jolie is already involved as an international development. She is a UN ambassador
right.
for refugees. So that's how I kind of got, you know, my first glimpse into that area. And then I started reading about it, making, you know, paper. I wrote a paper for my geography class back in high school about African countries and what kind of in dire situations a lot of them are economically and politically. So that's where it really hit me. And I wanted to have a chance to work there and to be able to help these people somehow. So I came with this idea to the U.S. With the SEEP Network. It's actually an international association for microfinance organizations. So microfinance, the idea was born back in the 70s, I believe, and it was started by Muhammad Yunus in Bangladesh. And Muhammad Yunus is a Nobel Peace Prize winner for this idea of microfinance and for starting Grameen Bank in Bangladesh. And the idea is that you can give microloans to the ultra poor and they will give you money back. And he gave these microloans to women in Bangladesh. And surprise was that they gave the money back, and not only they were able to help themselves, feed their children, put their children through school, but they were also investing in their communities. So that's how, you know, everybody now in international development knows that investing in women has this ripple effect. So that's the idea of microfinance. And SEEP Network was essentially a network for all these different microfinance organizations around the world. There's hundreds, probably thousands now of a microfinance organization. It was kind of like that knowledge hub for this organization that will have a conference every year. There's different webinars, training, an online knowledge base, research papers, things like that. So that's how I got involved in like online community management, social media, through SEEP Network.
So you were hooked once you got really involved with your job.
Absolutely, yeah.
Did you always want to go on and get a master's, or did you say to yourself, I need to do this to kind of affect more change, that I should go on and get an MBA?
From my experience working with nonprofits, I realized that, and my introduction to the idea of social business, right? The idea of social business is that businesses are created not just for the sole purpose of making money, but also for solving any given social problem, be it, you know, water crisis and sanitation, lack of access to education, women's rights, et cetera, et cetera. For me, it was crystal clear that I needed practical business knowledge coupled with my international relations experience in order to be able to create or contribute to the sustainable solutions to poverty, international development, things like that.
So you get the MBA while you're still working or you're going full time?
I was going full time.
All right. And then, as I said in the introduction, that it was on a visit back to Moscow that something really happened to you in terms of Globe In. So tell us about that.
After I left the SIP network, I had this already knowledge of, as I mentioned, online community management, social media. And I thought to myself, can I apply this knowledge to Russia somehow? As I mentioned, the international development and social business sector were very small in Russia at the time. So I was thinking, my hope was that I can contribute to the development of this sector somehow, even not being in Russia. So I founded the first Russian-speaking network for social entrepreneurs. It's an online community for social entrepreneurs. So the idea was to be like a knowledge hub, mini social network for social entrepreneurs where they can meet each other, share their knowledge, experience, things like that. But also, whenever I would travel back to Moscow, I would organize these meetups for social entrepreneurs, like physical events where people just meet each other and talk in real life. And meetups were really big back then in US, not so big in Russia yet. But yeah, I would organize meetups every few months. And my co-founders, Vlad and David, who were already here in California, they just randomly showed up to one of the meetups.
It was kind of the stars were aligned for you?
I guess so. I remember my friend talking. They were just kind of like working on this Globe In idea. And my friend, she was already talking about it so excitedly. And she's like, look at these guys. This is what they're thinking about creating. And I was like, yeah, cool, that's great. And that's a potentially great solution to solving poverty. But I wasn't kind of like, it didn't click with me, like I'm going to work with them right away. But after thinking about it and after going through my MBA, I finally reconnected with them. And then we started to working together, like probably a few months after we met. So when we met my co-founders, the idea was really exciting to me as a potential solution to solving global poverty, a sustainable solution, which is very important for me. Yeah, I thought about it. I was still going through finishing my MBA program. And after a few months after we met, we reconnected and started working together.
They're Russian, correct?
Correct. Yes. They're Russian-American, but they came to U.S. Back in the 90s.
And what year was it that you met them in Moscow?
That was December 2012.
2012. And so then you all kind of reconnect in the States to give birth to this new business?
Yes. The idea, the Globe In was officially being founded exactly in December 2012. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was finishing my MBA, but I was already working with them, part-time, wherever I can help with the things that I knew best, you know, social media, digital marketing, things like that.
I said in the introduction that the mission of Globe In is to help solve poverty through fair wages and job creation, and that you look for exceptional work created by artists from places all over the world. So how did you match up with these people? Give me the history of Globe and how did you get this off the ground?
So the idea was to create almost like an Etsy for developing countries, right? To give this individual artisans a platform where they can sell their products directly to the customers around the world, kind of surpassing the middleman and being able to pay the artisans what they're asking. And the first test was that my co-founder, actually, she went to Mexico and she met a few artisans there and just tried selling their products online. And they did sell. That was was kind of a first very early on stages of Globin. And then we created this Etsy-like platform where you would be able to buy a pair of earrings from Fatima in Morocco. Fatima gets this order because a lot of times artisans obviously don't speak English. A lot of times they don't have access to the computer. So we would have this artisan helper, or for example, Peace Corps volunteers who would be working together with artisans, helping them, you know, fulfill the orders.
So like a middleman almost.
They're not middlemen. They're just kind of working together with artisans. So they're not even getting like a kickback or anything like that.
No, I understand.
Yeah, but you need some kind of local support on the ground for artisans. That's the reality. And then Fatima would send the earrings to you and you would get it in a few weeks. The model was not working very well. You know, in the age of Amazon, waiting for 3 weeks, even for a handmade pair of earrings, was not a great customer experience. And that's when we started thinking about the idea of subscription box, of the first ever handmade artisan fair trade subscription box.
Yeah, it really is such a novel concept. So a subscription box has a theme, for example, that it would be jewelry or it could be certain types of spices or foods. Is that where this kind of came from?
Yeah, you know, Birchbox was, you know, booming back then. There were so many subscription boxes coming out in the market. So we started the Artisan Box subscriptions. And in a nutshell, the Artisan Box, it's a subscription, a fair trade subscription to kitchen, home decor, and a little bit of lifestyle products. And every single product there is handmade, sustainably sourced, and fair trade. And as you mentioned, our Artisan Boxes have monthly themes. So every month we curate a new theme, and themes can be cozy, wellness, jewelry, kitchen, saver, things like that. And in every box, you get 4 to 5 different products curated around a theme. So it's a full experience. And a huge part of the experience is what we call an artisan brochure, a mini booklet that tells you the story of an artisan behind every product in the box and how your purchase of this specific product is impacting their life in a positive way. And just an example of one of our most popular boxes ever, the theme is called Cozy. And it comes with this beautiful hand-painted Tunisian mug, a fair trade scarf from Thailand, fair trade cocoa powder from Ghana. And everything comes in a basket, a palm leaf hand-woven basket from Oaxaca, Mexico, where we work directly with 66 women artisans who weave these beautiful products for us.
So in other words, every item in each basket comes from someplace around the world. It's not that 1 month you're only getting items from Morocco.
Sometimes it varies. Like we recently did a full box from India, but it's more theme-driven, experience-driven, but then like a country-driven. You know, for some boxes can have like 2 matching pieces from India or Morocco, and then the rest of the items will be from other countries. But yeah, it's very much theme-driven. Like curation is what we excel in, mm-hmm. and kind of what our customers really come to appreciate about the Artisan Box.
I'm really trying to wrap my head around this, Lisa, because, I mean, you make it sound so simple, but it really must have been a major undertaking of making these matches between men and women from all over the world, getting them to come into my home.
It's still not easy. If you can imagine, all of these thousands of products, they come in the ship to, you know, fulfillment center in US, where everything is kind of assembled in the sets. We print the brochures and pack everything nicely, and then it goes out to the customer. So yeah, it's very much a world in a box.
How many people do you employ?
Oh, we work right now with over 1,000 artisans from over 40 different countries. We directly work, as I mentioned, with 66 women in Oaxaca, Mexico.
Right.
And with the rest of organizations, we work on the, you know, on the product basis. So we have amazing partners in India, Morocco, Tunisia. And our goal with all of our partners who are always have to abide by fair trade principles. A lot of our partners, like us, are members of the Fair Trade Federation. our goal is to build this long-term relationship so we can kind of help sustain more business for these artisan groups. For example, we have a really popular product from India, a hand-carved eyeglasses holder, if you can imagine that, and it's shaped in the form of a nose. It's very quirky, but it's very popular. And it quickly became our bestseller. So we are ordering, we're continuously ordering them, we're continuously creating jobs, sustaining jobs there for this hand carving community of artisans. And we came together with our partner Matter Bumi, who works directly with them on the ground, and we are sponsoring free healthcare clinic for the artisans and their whole community. So with these long-term partnerships, we can create even more impact than beyond fair wages, and that's our ultimate goal.
And how many people do you employ in the States?
We are pretty small. We're a 6-people team. So
Wait a minute. A 6-person team puts together these boxes for every month?
We do have a fulfillment center. Yeah, we do have a fulfillment center. Yeah, that would not be possible.
No, really?
Yeah, after 1,000 subscribers, we realized that we really cannot handle the volume at this point.
So at this point, as I mentioned, you have more than 6,500 subscribers. Are they just in the U.S. or are they worldwide?
They're actually worldwide, by about 99% of them are in the U.S.
Explain to me how Globin works in terms of what the cost is to the consumer. And do you have a choice of what it is that you can order, or everybody gets the same basket every month?
We curate a new theme every month. Some people really prefer the surprise aspect and they just, you know, curate whatever you guys want and we'll take it. Perfect. You don't have to worry about any choices. Other people really love choices. So they go back to their subscription settings and they choose the theme that they like. They want to stay with a new theme, or they have option to choose from one of our best-selling themes that we're continuously restocking. On top of that, all of our members, subscribers, they have access to these add-ons, additional products that you can add on to your box at discounted members' prices. And yeah, we try to give them really nice, wide variety of add-ons to add, just kind of exposing our members to even more wide variety of fair trade products and brands.
Are you always looking for new artisans?
Yes. I would say like new artisans, new product ideas. Whenever we can make an impact, well, we feel great about it.
Do you travel the world to find these artisans?
Oh, we are based in San Francisco. We travel as much, you know, as a startup founder can afford to travel. Uh-huh. We try to be as lean as possible, of course. Most of our money always has to go to the artisans. I've traveled to Morocco. I've traveled to Haiti recently. We visit our artisans in Oaxaca quite regularly. We have a country manager in Mexico full-time there. A lot of times, you know, we connect with partners at the Fair Trade Conference, for example. We have a lot of partners there. And of course, a lot of organizations now are starting to reach out directly to us, offering our products. Another great way we partner with organizations is we come up with a product idea, right? And we go to our partners and ask them if the artisan can make it. For example, we had this idea that we got from Pinterest, you know, a hanging wall organizer. So we went to this artisan group in Peru, asking them, can they make it? You know, they've never made this specific product, but they have the skills and materials to create it. So that's kind of, we put the two together. Because it's a big part of the fair trade business, businesses like ours, is to kind of teach the artisans about the demand of the U.S. market, right? Teach them how they can integrate modern aspects of design with their traditional crafts.
Do you have artisans in the United States who are involved with Globin?
No, our mission right now is very focused on developing countries because we believe that's where we can make the most impact.
And also, do you still now consider Globin a startup?
Yes, very much so.
Why?
You know, 6-people team, a lot of work. I don't think we're a huge company yet. And I don't think we will ever operate like one, honestly. Mm-hmm. You always want to have this nimble startup operations, at least to some extent within your company. But yeah, we are very much a startup.
So where do you want to go? What do you see is Globin's future?
You know, our goal is to grow our subscribers numbers. Our goal is to kind of share our mission with as many people as we can in the US and around the world. And the reason is that, you know, the more sales, the more subscribers we have, especially subscribers, the more continuous business we can create for the artisans. And that's huge. Our artisans do not need, you know, money handouts. They just need fair wages so that they can help themselves, empower themselves and their communities through the work that they're doing and through the work that we are paying them fairly for.
Did you ever imagine that you would be on the ground floor of such an operation, of such an endeavor?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I always knew I will be involved in the social business and, you know, poverty alleviation sector. I didn't, you know, quite know. I never thought that I would be a co-founder of a startup in Silicon Valley. Yeah, that's different.
And so as director of marketing, you really have your work cut out for you, don't you?
I've been doing marketing with Globin for many years now. And yeah, my primary goal is always, you know, growth of subscriptions, you know, talking to customers, learning from them as much as possible, and yeah, partnering with bigger organizations.
Now, I have a couple of other quick questions for you. Have you been back to Moscow?
Last time I went was 2 years ago, and I'm actually going there this winter again.
And I must ask the question, are you swimming?
Not as much as I would like to, but I'm actually planning to start swimming, maybe just a little bit. Definitely not going to be competing anymore. Yoga is my thing now.
But it's just so ironic that what started off as somebody who was growing up, a teenager in Russia, who wanted to swim and came to the States, and look what happened to you. Do you ever just kind of glance back and say, I can't believe where I am, literally and figuratively? Like, I just can't believe it?
Yeah, definitely. I am getting this feeling a lot these days. And yeah, you're absolutely right. It's very funny that without me swimming, nothing like that would have happened.
None of this would have happened. So you see good things for Globin. You're only just going to get bigger and better, I'm guessing.
Yes, that's definitely the goal. We have amazing partners. We have artisans who rely on us, who, you know, we know personally. So we are in it for the long haul.
Now, tell us how people can get in touch with Globin and exactly what it is that they need to do.
So, of course, our website, it's globin.com/box, globein.com/box. That will take you to the Artisan Box subscription page. And I encourage you to try and subscribe for yourself. As I mentioned, we are very flexible. We try to inspire mindful consumption. So we want to give you as much flexibility so you get the products that you really love. You can cancel anytime. You can skip a month. You can even send the Artisan Box to a friend. You can change your shipping address every month and, you know, share the Artisan Box subscriptions with your loved ones around the world, around the U.S. So the website is the obvious one. Our Facebook community is really strong. It's facebook.com/globin/globein. On Instagram, we are globin_world, and I believe the same on Twitter. And you always can reach out to us via email, support@globin.com.
Lisa Moiseva, thank you so much for joining me today and getting up so early in the morning from San Francisco to have this conversation. I'm really very grateful. And I'm also very much in awe of what you've done. And I just wish you and Globin continued success.
Thank you so much, Sandy. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. Even if it's this early in the morning, it's been great.
Well, thank you for what you do. Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.